Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome back to the Lantern Rouge Cycling Podcast with Benji Nyson. This show is supported by our show partner, Locole. There's no rest for the wicked, which we are indeed straight into Tour de Suisse Stage 1 and 2. We'll recap Stage 1, bundle it into Stage 2. Some of you might be calling us lazy for not doing a double day with Swiss and Dauphiné, but yeah, you're right, I guess. So Stage 1 was the TT. This Tour de Suisse course is a little bit different to a one-week race. There's no genuine mountaintop finish. It's a lot of descent style finishes. There's two time trials. It's really a course for riders like Sharkman, Fuglsang, Woods, Alaphilippe, Carapaz, those sort of riders. And they're the riders we have here as well as Mathieu van der Poel. You might have heard of him. And Michael Matthews, who's always had trouble in Swiss, sort of, you know, behind Peter Sagan. But yeah, the TT, Benji, yesterday, I think Bissiger was the favorite at $2.30, Dennis at $2.80, and then Kung about $8 to $9. It was a 10.9K flat TT at Frauenfeld. And yeah, what were the results?
When it comes to the top 10 of this stage, we had the Swiss actually dominating the first time trial at the Tour de Suisse, so the country's probably going to be pretty happy. Number one, Stefan Kung. We had an average of 54.5 kilometers an hour, which is pretty damn high. Bissiger in second, and that was on 4 seconds. Cataneo with a good time trial, really good at the end on 12 seconds. Let's talk about that for like 10 seconds after the top 10 here. Tom Scully, 15 seconds down on 4th. Alaphilippe on 5th on 19 seconds. Jonas Rutsch with a good time trial, 22 seconds down. And then on the same time, Stijmler, Vermeers, and Kroh Andersen. So 7, 8, and 9. On the 10th spot, we've got Rohan Dennis, who, according to many, disappointed. But I think you had a feeling that it wasn't going to be a top-notch, as in on a shorter time trial for him.
Oh, I thought he'd come like 5th or something. But I looked at Kung's result in the Tirreno TT, I think it was, Benji. And mm-hmm. That was a really, really good result. He came second. He came second in the San Benedetto del Tronto 10K TT behind Wafanat, 6 seconds behind. He beat Ganna, and I know Ganna wasn't on his best day, but still 6 seconds behind Van Aert. And, I mean, that's an out and back. And this one's a little bit more technical, which suits him. He's Swiss. I think he'd recon the course. He hit the corners really well. Obviously, all Swiss people know every part of Switzerland. I mean, sort of people yeah, but he super motivated for the home race. I think it's a safe assumption to make. And yeah, he was really good in the corners. I know Bissiger, the same applies to him, I guess. I mean, young guy. But I just think, I know Bissiger is nice. We were on him a little bit more. And before that Paris-Nice TT, it wasn't a big surprise to us. That being said, that's his best result in the TT so far, and the UAE TT was good as well, I guess. But the point is, Kung and Bissiger didn't see a big difference between them going into it. But otherwise, yeah, Dennis maybe just wet and corners wasn't feeling it. But the GC, there were some GC changes first of all, Alaphilippe, Benji, 5th. Is that kind of like he's showing that Tour de France stage, you know, the TT won the Tour de France? I think this is almost more surprising to me because it's pancake flat.
Yeah, exactly. I think that a shorter time trial does fit him much more than a longer time trial, as in a 10 kilometer versus 30 kilometers on flat. So this is definitely better for him. He's got that explosivity and he can kind of push that forward to 10 kilometers in this section. 20 seconds down, 19 to be precise. Very good time trial for him. Quite genuinely, and that's not the only rider from his team that did very well here. Scheimler at 7th spot, not really worthy for GC, but very good. But Cataneo on the 3rd spot, he's definitely a helper, at least for Alaphilippe on this one. And he had a very strong TT in 3rd, and what's funny about his performance is that Stefan Kung was already signing shirts, like, when 20 people still had to finish, because he was pretty sure he was going to win. And then Cataneo came on his bike and actually rode a very good time trial. So it was at least a tiny bit scary after signing all those shirts, but I didn't have to put it in the fire or something. But that's a funny detail I found. But next to Alaphilippe, yeah, I think that the legend himself, El Jaguar de Tulcan, rode a good TT as well. 15 von 31 seconds, man. Crazy.
I mean, yeah, only 2 seconds behind Schachmann. He's got to be happy with that, I think, as well. Alaphilippe's a big surprise, big advantage for him going into the later stages on GC. The biggest other story was Dumoulin. He's back. His first race day since returning. Not his best TT, but he didn't seem to have big expectations for himself anyway. He said he's not coming in here in race-winning form. 16th on 32 seconds, and it's a flat 10K, just over prologue length TT. He's more a 25K rolling hills type killer in the TT anyway. So, yeah, just good to see him back, and unsurprising that that's where he sits. He's not going for GC here at all. Anything else from the TT, Benji, before we head to the second stage?
Well, I think that indeed Alaphilippe was the biggest name for that. The best performance there compared to other GC riders. But looking at the start list of this race, we've got, at least I had, Carapaz and Alaphilippe as potentially the winners here. And then there's quite a few other people that could compete for a GC. But a Sivakov, 44 seconds down. Sure what to expect. It's pretty rainy in Swiss right now. And his bike handling has proven to not be his best quality. I'll so I'm scared for him.
A minute down today in stage two. So I think Sivakov GC is done. And that's a problem for him as well and Dennis. But yeah, on Sivakov, Benji, I mean, you think he's really good, but is it like a, we're not being unfair and saying this is a problem for him now?
It's a problem.
Yeah.
I think it's definitely a problem. And it's the same thing that Bourne and Thomas have when it comes to rainy descents and so forth. You're always scared for them. You always think that it is a weakness for them. And if competitors start abusing that, start using that. It's not abusing to use a weakness of someone else when it comes to on-bike performance. And in all honesty, the others can do so. So they can use it against them. And if they do, then he might lose time for it. But to be fairly honest, I think that we've had Sivakov perform at very good levels, but it's been a bit inconsistent, and the problem is that he's always crashing before he can prove it. So it's hard to say he's good or not at this point, because it's very difficult for us to like analyze that. But Pozzo Vivo, 41 seconds down on this one as well. Gino Mater, same thing. Where did Wout Poels end on the time trial? That's something I'm very curious about, but I can't find his name very easily.
I didn't check. He goes under the radar at the moment. He finished a minute 14. Did he crash?
I don't know, but I recall him doing very well in a Sky Time trial like years back.
He's not that bad at TTing. He's better than Anton Palter and Benoit Cosne-Ferrara at TTing. That's something must have gone wrong there. Anyway, we'll move on to stage two. So, you know, GC already alive after stage one TT from Neuhausen am Rheinfall to Lachen. 178 Ks, rolly day for the punchers. Maybe MVDP as well. The question would be, could the punchers do anything on the final climb? It's called the Lichtstrasse climb. 2.4 Ks, 8.3%. It crests with 8 Ks to go, then descent, and then a false flat descent running to the line. Before that, we've sort of got 8K, 4.5%, 7.8 Ks, 5.1% on the Oberrichen climb, which is about 40 Ks from the finish, which does have steep sections in it. These climbs are a bit fake newsy. There's like a 12% section in the Goch climb and a 9% section in the Oberrichen climb. So a tough day and a difficult one for pure sprinters. Someone like Michael Matthews could be in trouble on that final climb. It'd be up to De Koenig and Alaphilippe really to make that final climb, along with riders like Schachmann and Mike Woods, who's also here. But pretty strong break, Benji. Went up the road, of course, with some of the Team Switzerland guys.
Yes, indeed. We had Claudio Imhoff in there. He had a good time trial on day one as well. I recall him doing well in one of these World Tour races 2 years ago, I think. He got a top 15 somewhere. This is from my mind, so it could be wrong. But then last year, he didn't perform too well. So he is making a bit of a comeback in the colors of Team Switzerland, together with another Swiss rider, Tom Boehly, for Cofidis now. It's weird seeing him ride for Cofidis after years at UAE, to be fairly honest. But next to that, we also had two riders from Rally. And it surprised me that Rally's at the start list of Tour de Suisse. I'm surprised they got a wild card, because it's usually pretty biased when it comes to the countries. And to see that happen, it's pretty cool to see. So in the end, I'm I'm happy to see that. I think it was Zukowski and also Delchin. Eventually, that breakaway did fall apart a bit later into the race, not on the Lichtstrasse itself, but on the climbs beforehand. And it were the rally riders who basically got dropped by the other two. Tomboli was going for the KOM points. I am not sure he actually gained them because my ranking isn't updated yet. But I saw him win most of them, so I'm guessing that is in KOM lead right now. And in second there, Imhoff tried to take a lot of the points as well, trying to go for it. In the end, they both got away, and it was towards the start of the actual last Lichtstrasse that the breakaway started falling apart again, and Imhoff went alone. But let's pull it back to the peloton, because some stuff was happening. We had some action pretty early on in the race, as in I saw Vanderpool going to the front of the peloton, going into a descent, then pacing hard in a descent, and then he went off the front and bike exchange started pacing. What was happening there?
It was chaos. All day they'd been sort of back and forth between FDJ, Alpecin, and De Koenig. You pace the break back. FDJ was sort of keeping it 5 minutes, but they're like, well, Kung doesn't suit him the finish. Then Alpecin and De Koenig, Tim de Klerk were doing a fair amount of the work, because they're the guys with Alaphilippe and Van der Poel that actually want to win the stage. And yeah, it was raining like really heavily, really, really heavy rain, dark, low clouds.
Footage.
Oh, yeah, footage, yep. Oh, I don't want to be too mean to Rye. I mean, but yeah, the footage is absolutely perfect. So credits to the Tour de Suisse host broadcaster. But on that descent off the Oberrichen, the longest descent left in the day, MVP went to the front, I think, for safety, and there was a split. We don't know what caused the split, but there was a split, and there's a long valley of about 15 Ks, and we were trying to figure out who's in which group. And because we saw, we perked our ears up even more because we saw, well, Bex and Alpecin are pacing really hard. That means someone must have been dropped. And I think the main person that was dropped was Dennis in terms of GC. I mean, he's done well.
Pozzo Vivo, man.
Okay, Pozzo Vivo, but Dennis has done well. Actually, podium to the Swiss GC as he won to the Swiss GC. But, and I thought Hirschi might have been dropped, but we couldn't see Alaphilippe for ages. Eventually, Hirschi was in the main group anyway. So all the guys really contesting the stage were in G1. I think it was just Sivakov and Dennis that had been dropped on that wet descent. And so we're coming up to the Lichtstrasse of just Imhoff alone. They're going to catch him on the climb for sure. He's at like 20 seconds. We get to the base, and it's Therese Dievenens absolutely slaps it for Alaphilippe for 200 meters. Do you think that was the way to go for De Koenig, Benji? If your goal is right, it's drop Mathieu van der Poel. If you want to win the stage, you want to drop him on this climb. Do you want Maldi and Dries to set a harder pace for three quarters of it and then Alaphilippe attack at the end? Or, you know, like in Imola, they had the French team did a pretty good job setting him up. Or do you go super hard with Alaphilippe from the base and then hope Schachmann and Woods help you?
I actually found the strategy they used pretty decent, because this is not like a 3 kilometer climb. It's a 2.4, if I remember correctly. Yes. And we noticed at the start of the climb that Murisa was setting up Van der Poel just before that Dievenens move happened. And Murisa was hammering it, Van der Poel in second position going into the Lichtstrasse, and then Dievenens hits it, which causes him and Alaphilippe to take the front. And Van der Poel kind of gets pushed back to like 5th, 7th, 8th, 9th, 10th, 15th position. And it's weird, because I'd expect Van der Poel to have no issue with that move by Dievenens. So he must have like had himself push back a bit, or decided to go back a bit, which would be a real, really weird decision. So I'm guessing that he just got pushed back a bit in the group. And that caused me to think, oh no, positioning again, please don't tell me that this is going to be a problem again. And Dievenens kept on hitting and kept on hitting and kept on hitting. And it was Alaphilippe's turn. And
Eddie Dunbar, don't disrespect Eddie.
Okay. We'll talk about Eddie and Woods, okay?
Well, did Alaphilippe, I swear Eddie Dunbar counted and Mike Woods was on his wheel, and I was like, what is going on? And I think that's I've been waiting since the race finished half an hour to hype up Eddie Dunbar's attack. It was so good. He's trying to make it hard for Carapaz in the rain. And then, yeah, Alaphilippe attacked again. And I think, to Benji's point about MVP, it looked like, and this is hindsight 2020 talking, but I mean, it seems to be the case that he tried to ride this climb steady and not be baited into a big surge at the start. And that's what was happening with Alaphilippe, Carapaz, Schachmann counters. But then Alaphilippe counters again and no one works with him. And so that's what I really wanted to ask you, Benji. Why didn't Schachmann, Woods and Carapaz work straight away with Alaphilippe? Was it just a question of not having the legs?
I think that if you're in that situation and you have a bit of a gap on the likes of Van der Poel that is bridging up, I think that it's a moment of like, ooh, Alaphilippe had that bunch here. He made a big bunch here. I got to his wheel because on paper, Alaphilippe is a better accelerative puncher than the other riders. So the other riders reach his wheel again and are like, I need like 2 seconds. And I don't know if it's ideal for a Carapaz to decide, oh, it's my turn now. I don't think this is the kind of stage where Carapaz needs to make that difference because Van der Poel is not his competitor for GC. So I don't see the point in Carapaz taking over here and trying to help out Alaphilippe, who's likely going to try and outsprint him for the stage anyway. Schachmann then, he's the next rider. I think it's more worth for him.
Wait. I think Schachmann's, he fits into your Carapaz point, and we know that from his mentality in the final. Schachmann's here for GC. The parkour suits him a lot in this Tour de Switzerland. And it seemed that was what people were thinking. Alaphilippe really wanted the stage. The other riders were thinking a little bit about GC because Schachmann then, he obviously had legs because he attacked right over the top. But we saw MVDP bridging with, I think, was it Fraile? It was an Astana rider he came with. He got into their group. The big name who has had a terrible run of it, pretty much disappointed since signing at Movistar, was Ivan Garcia Cortina. He was in that group and with us thinking, holy, he's a quick man too. So, but yeah, Paris-Nice 2020, but since Movistar, is that with Movistar? I can't remember.
No.
Anyway, it's basically the group that Alaphilippe didn't want: Carapaz, Schachmann, Woods, MVDP, Ivan Garcia, Cortina, and it's the big name that did get dropped though. The quick man was Michael Matthews. Anyone else I'm missing? Here she was there, but I couldn't see him. Benji, I think it was full same with MVDP, but yeah, here she. Where did he come from?
Well, at some point, I thought he was dropped earlier on, and then he came back, well, in the background again. And it doesn't look like Hirschi's on that level where he can have that acceleration to try and follow, which is a bit odd because acceleration was what he had the most last year. But now he just seemed to be Zubeldiaing his way towards that group again on the Lechstrasse. And I don't know. I don't know where he came from in the end, but he did come back towards the end, and he surely made that group. And maybe it's perhaps because we're not noticing him too much because of the shirt he's wearing. We're not used to it yet.
Yeah, that could be it. That's a fair point. I mean, I was trying to find him, especially in the rain. It's hard to see the UAE guys as well, I find. But anyway, they get onto this descent. No one's really working with anyone. And eventually MVDP, with I think 3Ks to go, he just decides to attack like he did on Tirreno with a sort of a long straight drag of like -3%. -2%, yep. It's really rainy, and he gets an initial gap. I think Fuglsang or Wout Poels was trying to close to his wheel, or Schachmann as well, and he just kept a 10-meter gap, and then those guys start thinking about self-preservation, which is, I don't want to be the guy chasing MVDP with no one helping me because I'm just going to lose. And so he played off the other GC contenders perfectly. That's why the attack worked so well. And he got that gap. And then Alaphilippe was pretty much cooked. He'd been the most aggressive on the final climb. Everyone's looking at him. He did such a good TT. He's ahead of them on GC as well, assuming that Kung is dropped. So MVDP playing off that and gets a gap, and it's only Schachmann that's able to bridge with him. Wout Poels spends ages trying to bridge, eventually gets to their wheel with like 400 meters to go. And the curious thing was, and I thought it was, good on him for committing to his long-term plan, Schachmann immediately pulling for MVDP once he gets to his wheel because he was thinking about putting time into Julian Alaphilippe because he's here for GC. So I thought, good on him. He probably thought, if I don't pull with MVDP, I'm 99% chance still losing the sprint anyway. So I may as well just keep us going. Mathieu van der Poel, he's attacked, he's hang on the climb, and you can see him lining up Schachmann with about 250 meters to go. He jumps and it's all over. If you watch the overhead shot, the speed difference is crazy. Schachmann pretty much didn't even contest the sprint with him. He's just trying to make sure he got the bonus seconds for second if they do have them here. So Van der Poel wins the stage, a second ahead of Schachmann, 4 seconds ahead of Poels, in a group with Garcia, Cortina, Hirschi, Carapaz, Woods, Alaphilippe, Fuglsang, Kroon, all on a Kroon about 9 seconds back. So pretty exciting stage, some big names. Remind me of Tirreno. MVDP doing what he always does, Benji? Were you surprised you got over that climb so easily?
Well, he and Alaphilippe were my two favorites for this stage personally. I had their names, well, in my mind for this one. Just because Van der Poel, I'd expect him to get over a 2.4-kilometer climb at 8%. It's not like it's in a Lombardia climb, for example, where he has to like drop and then try and come back and descend afterwards. This is actually like the length that he can get over, and it surely was a proper performance by him, of course, because he ends up winning it. That kick from Schachmann was pretty damn strong. Schachmann held on for a tiny bit, but couldn't hold that at all. Garcia Cortina was actually like 20 meters behind Wout Poels or 30 meters behind Wout Poels, but made that sprint towards Wout Poels' wheel just on the line. And it was Hirschi that was just behind him there over the line as well. Carapaz tried to like close down the offense of Schachmann and Van der Poel, because obviously Carapaz would be like, oh, Schachmann's at the front, let's try and chase this down. Didn't really care about sprinting in the end, just wanted to pace as much as possible. But a lot of like names that we were expecting up there, but this stage was probably a bit more GC-centered than I anticipated at the beginning, probably because of the weather that it made it just a bit worse. And, well, just a bit better for us, I guess. But all in all, what is notable as well is that not 22 seconds later, a group arrives with Michael Matthews winning the sprint there ahead of Serrano, who's been riding amazing this year for Movistar. Genuinely, love the guy. Came from Caja, performing really well, and I look forward to seeing him ride every single time that he does. And at the back of the group, Stefan Kung, surviving this stage. And not only surviving this stage, but finishing the stage with 1 second ahead in GC on Alaphilippe. So somehow, this man actually survived, which is very good. Like, this is on the level of climbing off his world championships third position, I think, the one where Mats Pedersen won. And I keep getting surprised by the all-roundness of what Stefan Kung can do. The only thing he can't do is sprinting, but that's pretty clear by now.
Yeah, I mean, great performance from him, finishing so close behind. Maybe the wet conditions, he seems to relish them as well. It's going to be another difficult day for him tomorrow to keep that jersey, though. The GC standings now, he's got 1 second ahead of Alaphilippe, 2 seconds ahead of Schachmann. Schachmann makes up about 8 or 9 seconds on Alaphilippe after the TT. Van der Poel fourth on 6 seconds, then Garcia, Cortina, Cataneo, Carapaz is on 13 seconds, then Paulus, Meda, and Kroon. So Carapaz doing well. I mean, he can't be disappointed with the position he's in after the TT in today's stage. Tomorrow, 182 Ks from Laeken to Fafnau. Rolly again, but not as steep. Like, there's not a climb like today's stage, which is, you know, right before the finish, 2.4 Ks, 8%. The closest extended climb is the Umstaler Strasse, 3.4 k, 6%. It is up and down, I'll give you that, but it's 25 k from the finish. And I think it's going to be a sprint between Matthews and Mathieu van der Poel if van der Poel doesn't decide to attack first. I'm trying to look who else is quick here that could get over that. Jordi Meus won't get over that. Fred Wright and Stephen Williams, maybe they're pretty quick.
Cortina for a top five, perhaps?
Yeah, Cortina for a, yeah. As well. Do you think MVDP wants this to be a bunch sprint between he and Matthews?
Well, to be fairly honest, I don't think that Van der Poel is going to get over the monster climbs that are coming in the last few days. So I'm guessing that he's here to go for the stages. So I don't think he cares whether it's a sprint or whether it's him riding away at some point. But I think that a sprint is more likely the way that it's going to end, because if he has to make a move already to try and split it up, he needs to do it on that, whatever you called it. Am I gonna give it a try? Okay, glad that you took it on here. And that's it's still a while from the finish line, to be honest.
I got it wrong as well.
It's still a while from the end of the stage, and if he goes there already, it would be typical Van der Poel. And the only situation where I see that happening, if it's absolutely raining like today, perhaps that's when I see an early attack perhaps happening. But I don't see it happening genuinely. And I think that we're indeed going to see either a sprint finish reduced bunch or a miscalculation where a breakaway rider ends up winning like a Bissiger or something. You never know. Because Stefan Kung won stage like this in Tour de Suisse, or a stage like this in Tour de Suisse before as well in 2017 or something. And just a lot of these situations in the Tour de Suisse where a stage does end with a solo breakaway rider taking the victory. And on paper, though, Bike Exchange should be taking control, I'd expect. They did it today, so why would they not do it tomorrow on a stage that, on paper, well, fits him just as much, because I would have expected Matthews to fit on today's stage as well. But it might have been a bit too close to the finish line, the bunchy climb nonetheless. But I actually have a topic for you. Or something to add for this stage?
I just think it wouldn't surprise me if Van der Poel attacks with 17Ks to go on the Alpe d'Huron, 700 meters at 7.4%. Then it's descent for about 5 or more than that for about 10 kilometers. So, yeah, wouldn't surprise me to see Van der Poel attack on the Alpe d'Huron section. I think his punch there could be a good option. But yeah, what question do you have for me?
Well, a fun question for you, and it's a bit of a similar question to the one I had on our Dauphiné podcast. So for a stage like today, it's the same like a stage with cobbles in a Grand Tour, for example. You've got Movistar with a rider like Garcia Cortina who can go for the stage, and you've got Soler for a GC. Do you find it worthy for Cortina to go for the stage? Or do you think that he should have been waiting for Soler there to try and bring him back at the end?
Oh, nah, you got to let Cortina go for the stage. Like, that's pretty much why they signed him, to go for stages like this. I mean, Soler, he did a bad TT, didn't he? I mean, if he's up there on GC, like really close, where did he finish? He finished 1:06 back. If you finish a minute back, Ivan gets to go for the stage. Yep. Sorry, Mark. I think it's better for Soler to go for stages himself. Like, there's one stage, stage 5 suits him if he does a descent attack. He's a great descender in the wet. I think the one he can win, it's up. Nah, maybe it's a bit hard from the break if he loses enough time on GC. But yeah, he's a great descender, Marc Soler, it seems. He's good in wet conditions, like we saw at Romandy. I think he should just go for stages at this point, being so far back on GC. But yeah, pretty interesting parkour from the Tour de Suisse. We've got anything further to add, Benji? I think everyone should tune in. It finishes pretty late. If you knock off work early, it could be another MVP Alaphilippe showdown, which is something to, don't take it for granted. We're seeing things like that, even though they are, that happens so often. But yeah, anything else, Benji?
Yeah, I think that any race that Van der Poel is at suddenly makes it much more interesting for me. And that's because he lightens up, cycling for me. And I think for many people. And I think he made today's stage more fun than if he wasn't here as well. So I look forward to seeing tomorrow. I look forward to seeing the rest of the Tour de Suisse. I find the parcours of the Tour de Suisse really, really intriguing. The mountain stages that are coming are splendidly made, and I'm hoping to see some action there from our favorite here on the podcast now, Jaguar de Tulcan, when it's raining.
Yeah.
And I hope to see him ride very well so that Ineos has trouble at the end of the Swiss to decide who's their actual leader for the tour. And then we can start speculating about who it is. And then it's someone completely different, a fourth rider in the Ineos train. In the tour that actually becomes the leader.
Carlos Rodriguez, mate.
I'm down for it.
Can they do a mid-season transfer for Marc Padun? How much, in football, they can say, hey, we'll pay you $5 million a year for Marc Padun for one year.
They did it for Dennis, right, a few years ago?
No, they didn't do it then. Bahrain? No, Bahrain cut him mid-season, but Ineos only signed him at the end of the season.
No, the transfer beforehand that Dennis...
With Volters. Yeah, you're right. Wasn't that, from Garmin to BMC or something?
I don't fully remember, but it was something.
Yeah, you're right. All right, that's enough for today. We'll see you with the MVDP victory tomorrow as scheduled. Ciao.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.